Hello.
Haley.
I'm looking part of a pyramid here. Yeah, wow.
I've got.
Think they're ever going to protect my ass? Are you believing it? You know, this Irwin Harrison Gilmore, right? The father, David Harrison Gilmore, right, was partners with Peter Munk, the biggest Zionist in the world, like I told you. And when you're talking about trying to find the thread of their corporations, you just look at the different corporations, like I said, they set up in this pyramiding system.
Mm-hmm.
And then it continues on, and then it continues on and on and on. So you don't find the thread. Question is, who wanted Irwin dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm?
Yes.
That's the big question. Now, I won't tell you because my life would be on the line to talk about this over the phone and internationally. But let's go into what we were talking before. This is heavy shit, big time heavy shit. These are international Zionists. Okay, I'll just read you who Harrison and these people are talking. Oh, we'll give you a little reward. Fuck. Do you want to hear this? Part of my language.
Sure.
But...
That's no... Haley,
okay.
That's no problem.
Well, this is the major thing. David Gilmore is executive director and founder of the I don't know how to pronounce this. They took an island and they got the watering rights in Fiji to develop this Fiji Water LLC.
Yeah.
That's the biggest water. Here, I'll just read you. It's all on the WikiLeaks. You can read it for yourself. But anyway, David Gilmore is the chairman. Now, this place there, they set up a very exotic resort. How would you pronounce this? W-A-K-A-Y-A, Club and Spa?
W-A-Y-A-K.
No, sorry, W-A-K-A-Y-A.
Wakea.
Yes. Wakea, yeah. Anyway, people go there from Tom Cruise and on and on and on. So I'll just read you a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
These guys, they make me laugh. The day that my place was totally, totally trashed, I am taking a picture of Peter Munk. He's looking back at me like the snake in the grass. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
He got out. Peter Munk got out of, Hungary with the help of the guy that was supposedly hung in Israel. Huh?
Yeah.
It's all part. He never hung. It was just a ruse, right?
Yes.
That guy, I don't want to even say his name, but
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. David Gilmore is executive director also then of Zino, Z-I-N-I-O, and V-I-V, capital, like it's capital V, then small I, then capital V, mag, and the owner of this Wakaka, or whatever you pronounce it, Club and Spa. David Gilmore is executive director of all of these corporations. He started off first, what I heard about this David Harrison Gilmore was that he had this corporation with Peter Munk, and it was a corporation called Claritone. Now, in the archives, you'll see it in Wikipedia and whatever, they dumped, before the annual report came out, 29,000 shares. Insider training, much like I was telling you about the guy there with the Meyer Rush stuff. These guys got rich through inside trader information beforehand. Then they had odds with each other, Peter Munk, but they started the world's largest gold mine. He's co-founder with Peter Munk with regard to that. Also, he was part of Horsham Corp. They were partners, went into the world's largest real estate company called Trizec Hand Corporation. It's now called Brookfield, right? These guys own the biggest real estate properties. Here, I'll just show you the thread so you get what I'm talking about. In 2007, Gilmore founded the media company VIV Publishing LLC, whose first products was an entirely new concept in women's magazines, a health and lifestyle publication called VIV Mag, distributed exclusively in digital form. He explained his thrust into the world of publishing in the same year by acquiring Zeno, I guess it's Z, or however you say it in the States, C. Z-I-N-I-O.
And Z-I-N-I-O. Zinio.
Yeah.
Zinio.
Yeah. www.zinio.com. Yeah, they're the leading digital publishing, retail, and distribution platform for magazines and books. Zinio pioneered paperless distribution and has introduced responsible and innovative digital marketing practice to the print industry for distinguished publishers such as Alpha Media Group, Bonner Group, Gruner, plus Jaguar, I guess it is, Ashetti, Salicci Media, U.S., Hearst, that's part of the Hearst empire, right? Hearst, IDG, IPC Media, Thera Media, Inc., Martha Stewart Living, Omni Media, McGraw-Hill, Playboy Enterprises, Inc., Rogers Publishing Limited, Source Interlink Media, The Economist, Transcontinental, and Ziff Davis. Huh? Huh? What I was saying there, and then those corporations, again, go into sub, and it starts another pyramid going. This Peter Munk is known to be the biggest hit a godfather in the world. He works with a guy by the name of a takedown guy. When they ran the Claritone, they got Frank Sinatra to be the media person.
Wow.
Look, this, yeah. You know, these guys are trying to take, Clyde is going to live, to take these down, he has to be put into a witness protection program, right? They're talking about fighting over shares of water, get that, real estate. That are the big commodities. If we don't have water on the planet and these guys hoard it all, we're dead. Imagine that. How much did he get paid off Jesus Christ. Like Peter... they're all part of this unbelievable. Let's just read here. I'm going to go right into who Peter Munk is, so you know exactly what I'm talking about here. Peter Munk, and then you talk about the Permadex. They're all part of it, and then they, morphed into another. I found the link with the Permindex and a name that was part of Brunette. They want me whacked, I'll tell you. Peter Munk biography here. Peter Munk, Wikipedia, free encyclopedia. I'll read you this. Peter Munk, CC, born November the 8th, 1927, is a Canadian businessman. He's the chairman and founder of the gold mine company Barrick Gold, the world's largest gold mining corp. Do we understand where we are coming from?
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Munk was born in Budapest, Hungary, into a well-off Jewish family. Hungary was invaded by Nazi Germany in March 1944 when Munk was a teenager. His family escaped the Nazis on the Kaiser train, a train carrying 1,684 Jews to safety in Switzerland, arranged by Rudolf Kasner of the Zionist Aid and Rescue Committee, and as a result of negotiations with senior SS officer Adolf Eichmann.
Wow.
Eichmann didn't go down in a hanging.
Wow.
Huh? The Nuremberg trials were a ruse. Osama bin Laden wasn't hung. The Patsy hung for him, hoping to see those virgins that they're looking for, right?
You mean Saddam Hussein?
Oh, so, sorry. That's right. Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Yeah? A Patsy. The guy's teeth. Take a look at the teeth. Close enough, a look-alike. So if the hanging happened, he gladly went for those virgins to the in heaven and sucking him off until eternity.
Virgins.
Fucking awe. Jesus Christ. When I read this stuff, it makes my blood run, completely hot and cold and dry. And, Eichmann allowed some Jews to leave for Switzerland in exchange for gold, diamonds, that was obtained from the wealthy among them as a part of a series of the so-called Blood for Goods deal. And then he graduated from the University of Toronto with a degree in electrical engineering in 1952. So here's the link between David Harrison Gilmore and him. In 1958, he founded the Clairtone with business partner David Gilmore. This company manufactured high-end console stereos and later televisions, which was recognized icons for their day. The most famous Clairtone designs were the Project G. This is almost like is this part of a code word? Project Manhattan? Stuff like a Project G in quotes. Series which was seen in the film The Graduate. A clear case of insider trading, Monk and Gilmore quietly dumped 29,000 shares of Clairtone stock in 1967. Remember when I was talking about Meyer Rush that same year, 1967. Here's the pyramiding system, why the Meyer Rush was involved with these guys. They're all, how do you get a thread to the corporation? The forensic accountants, start climbing up that pyramid, and then they're relayed to that next pyramid because it's sub-pyramid. How are you going to keep a tab of that? And then they dissolve their corporation, start another one. Usually the game plan is, dissolve my company, I sell it for a buck to my relative, and then start in again, green mailing. When I told this to Clyde, he laughed his head off over and over. He said, read me that again. Anyway, later he was founded as the chairman and CEO of Southern Pacific Hotel Corporation, the largest hotel and restaurant chain in, this is Australia and Asia combined. It's called Australasia. Huh?
Yeah, Australasia.
They
yeah.
have all the biggest, largest hotel chain in Asia and Australia in 1970. Monk is now chairman and founder of Barrick Gold, the world's largest gold mining corp. Monk was founder and chairman of CEO of Trisec Properties, which is one of the largest U.S. REIT listed on the New York Stock Exchange, where in 2006, Trisec was sold to Brookfield Property. See that? They dissolve one, start again. And then they acquire all these properties. Thereafter, the entire world real estate. The water, the mining, the everything. Now, here's the link where I found the Gillies, right? He's a distinguished lecturer at the James Gillies Alumni Lecture. Am I pronouncing it right?
Yeah.
A-L-U-M...
Oh, alumni. Alumni.
Alumni. Alumni. So sorry.
No problem.
Because I can't pronounce anything. That's the school on pronunciation here. Anyway, James Gillies, that last name, Gillies, piqued my interest because it was part of that group there with the Permindex and then that private family, Bavonet and Bavonet. One of the names came up was that Gillies. So they're all interlinked. So Monk has also been a member of various boards, including the Toronto Hospital, chairman of the University of Toronto Crown Foundation, member of the World Gold Council. And in 1992, Peter Monk Charitable Foundation was founded and has since dispersed approximately $100 million to a variety of organizations that work to improve health, learning, and international reputation of Canadians. In May of 2006, Monk announced he would donate $37 million to the Toronto General Hospital, the largest gift ever made to a Canadian medical institution. And they called the donation help to support the Peter Monk Cardiac Center. These are small pieces of donation of what they're going into the... I think it was Jesse Ventura who started looking at the gold and the amount that these guys get. There was a segment on his conspiracy show, and I'm dead on sure that he did that. These guys rule the world, but the link is that Monk is an honorary board member of the Jewish National Fund, the JNF, and JNF is an agency mandated by the State of Israel to manage the lands of historic Palestine for the benefit of Jews worldwide. But anyway, there's a link that you'd see that he deals with this Peter Abeles, I guess, A-B-E-L-E-S. And I would say that this Peter Monk is the low part of the pyramid, not the peak, because the Rothschilds are the peak, right? But he's part of that top peak that's on the dollar. Now, I wanted to go into exactly why they took down Kennedy, right? This is very important because it comes to... Holy shit. I just wiped it out by accident. Give me just a second.
Sure, okay,
I have some secrets for you. Oh, my God, here. Okay, I'll get it. All right, Oswald in Montreal, I went over that document, right, where he has been seen by this Tremblay fellow, and that links that somehow he came to Canada to meet, and they met down at that very area where that Permindex was, not far from there. So that's the key thing. It was a Canadian... investigator who was sent into Cuba to check out what was going on with Cuba. So what I read you before about the link, do you want me to read that again or not?
Sure, sure.
Okay, here, I'll just say so that we... I'll just read you the thing. We've been informed by the senior U.S. Customs representative that his office has been contacted by several persons who have advised that Oswald was seen in Montreal last summer distributing pamphlets entitled Fair Play for Cuba at Saint-Jacques and McGill Street. That's not far from that place that was called St. John Street, right? The address which I gave you, which is now, they're like a stone's throw away from each other. The senior, this was the guy who I'm talking about, senior customs representative informs us that Mr. Jean-Paul Tremblay, investigator, customs and excise, Montreal, informed him on November the 27th, 1960. They've eliminated the date there by putting just a bracket, right? I'll get the exact date. I think I wrote down 1963, but they've eliminated the, by putting the parentheses around the 19. It says 196, and then it has the parentheses rather than the 3. So it's November the 27th, 1963, that he received one of the above-mentioned pamphlets from a man on St. Jacques Street, Montreal, believed to be in August of 1963, and he's positive that person was Oswald. Mr. Tremblay also stated that Oswald was accompanied by, at the time, by a short, homely, heavy woman who took unusually long steps when walking with two men about Oswald's age and weight. One of these two men is described as a little taller than Oswald, and that's my brother, right, and has a freckled face. And there's a link with the actual pictures that go on, but it's not in this. I have to still find it. Mr. Tremblay also stated that he believes he could identify the three persons that accompanied Oswald, and that the reason for paying special attention to these persons was because he was working on cases involving Cuba at the time. Mr. Tremblay has asked that he be protected as a source. Do you see how important it was for him to be protected? Mm-hmm. Is this man dead? Is he alive? Let's try to find out. Jean-Paul Tremblay. So senior customs representative today has informed that this information to Secret Service authorities in Washington, and it was also notified, to, I guess, to Jerome de Caspar, United States Consulate General. So anyone can Google that and they can find that, because what was so important is in that house also is I had the Fair Play for Cuba pamphlets that were in that house with that Camp Street, what do you call it, address that was stamped. I don't forget these things, right? I was after a major find. So Peter Monk, the day that my place closed down, I'm taking a picture of him in Hazelton Lanes because he had a little get-together. This is so sick, it makes me sick. That's how sick it is. they're just so, you know, it's... I'll get into Kennedy. Okay, I'll just close this for a second here, and I'll go into the Kennedy files of why they offed Kennedy. Just give me one second here.
Sure.
Because I have to bring it up. Okay, this is on a site called JFK, President John F. Kennedy and the Federal Reserve Executive Order 1. Now, this is why it's so important. On June the 4th, 1963, this was what went down. It was from an article or in a magazine called The Final Call, Volume 15, Number 6, on January 17th, 1996, it was brought out. On June the 4th, 1963, a little-known attempt, this is like it's little-known that there was an attempt made to strip the Federal Reserve Bank of its power to loan money to the government at interest. On that day, President John F. Kennedy signed Executive Order 1111, four ones and a zero. The number 4 is the sign of death. So it was a death for the Federal Reserve. That number was not lightly chosen, right? That returned to the U.S. government the power to issue currency without going through the Federal Reserve. These guys want to continue their Federal Reserve funny money stuff, right? So Mr. Kennedy ordered the Treasury the power to issue, and this is in quotes, to issue silver certificates against any silver bullion, silver, or standard silver dollars in the Treasury. This meant that for every ounce of silver in the U.S. Treasury vault, the government would introduce new money into circulation. In all, Kennedy brought nearly $4.3 billion in U.S. notes into circulation. Now, the ramifications of this bill are enormous because he introduced this bill. They recalled the money. This is after they knocked JFK off, right? So with a stroke of a pen, that's all it took, Kennedy was on his way to putting the Federal Reserve of New York out of business. And if enough of these silver certificates were to come into circulation, they would have eliminated the demand for the Federal Reserve notes, and this is because the silver certificates are backed by silver, and the Federal Reserve notes are not backed by anything. They're made out of thin air. Does anyone get the gist?
Yes.
Executive Order 11110 could have prevented the national debt from reaching its current point, right, the level, because it would have given the government the ability to repay its debt without going to the Federal Reserve and getting on their bended knees, right, to all the Rothschilds and sucking them off. I mean, Jesus Christ, I'm rude with my words, but that's what Nelson Thal, with the day that I met him, said, Haley, can you get on your knees and can you suck me off? We're in this private men's club.
You're kidding.
I said, what the fuck for? If you want to buy me a drink, what do you think, I'm nuts or something?
Ridiculous.
And this is what, when you see the rituals of Jane Mansfield, right? She had to do this to the Hollywood people. That's what Marilyn Monroe had to do to Hollywood guys. And they don't mince no words about this. You know, they use you. They abuse you. These are satanic serpents. Anyway, the Federal Reserve is being charged. Am I so crude in my wording?
No. Haley, believe me.
This is just the tip of the iceberg.
I know all about Maryland and Hollywood. I just read a very, very good book about it, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah, no, I couldn't believe when Nelson said that. I said, piss off, you know? And so, anyway, executive order gave the U.S. the ability to create its own money backed by silver. Now, after Kennedy was assassinated, just 5 months later, no more silver certificates were issued. The final call was learned that the executive order was never repealed by any U.S. president through the executive order and is still valid. Get that. Isn't that important? Still valid? No one repealed it. Why then is no president utilizing it? Bring that. That's a key line there. Never repealed it. Make Jesse Ventura find this stuff out real fast anyway. Virtually all of the near $6 trillion, so now where is it at? Our debt, how many more trillion were kept climbing and climbing. Anyway, trillion debt has created since 1963. And if a U.S. president had utilized Executive Order 11110, the debt would have been nowhere near the current level. Perhaps the assassination of JFK was a warning to future presidents who would think to eliminate the U.S. debt by eliminating the Federal Reserve control over the creation of money. Mr. Kennedy challenged the government of money by challenging the two most successful vehicles that have ever been used to drive up the debt, war and a creation of money by privately owned central bank, which is run by the, you know, all of the, here we have, I thanked Jim Mars when he started naming those banking cartels. I said, you know, when it was published before, those guys got a hit right in the middle of the forehead, right quick, because you weren't allowed to even print that. So when the book started coming out by Jim Mars, by A Rule by Secrecy and on, and the, you know, the creature on Jekyll Island, they hit the hot spot there. Anyway, it would have severely cut into the profits and controls of the New York banking establishment. So as America's debt reaches the unbearable levels and a conflict emerges in Bosnia that will further increase American debt, one is forced to ask, will President Clinton have the courage to consider utilizing Executive Order 11110? If so, is he willing to pay the ultimate price for doing so? So, I remember something. This is now on top of from the top of my head. He started pardoning major players who were part of Mossad.
Clinton did.
No, the guy's name was, give me a second here.
Yeah, I mean, was this Bill Clinton who was pardoning them?
Yeah, Clinton. Yeah. And he said, I'm not going to play with the Mossad. He says he's frightened of the Mossad. Clinton said that. And I found that in mainstream media because he pardoned, I always forget this guy's name.
Mark Rich?
Give me.
Mark Rich.
Sorry, that's it, Mark Rich. I don't know why, Mark Rich. And somewhere I've got to find that key piece where Clinton says, Jesus Christ, I'm scared to death of the Mossad. I'll do whatever they say. So he was just behooving to them. Oh, I got a very, very funny email that had Monica Lewinsky is 50 now. I wonder what she's doing now. Is she crawling on her hands and knees? What she did in the White House, right?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, and of course.
Again, sucking off. Jesus Christ, there's no end to what they always want, this stuff. And then they had Clinton by the short and curlies bringing in that Monica Lewinsky. I'll do whatever you want, right? But he didn't want to eject into her vagina, then it would have had big time proof, so It went, you know, down her throat. I don't know if she spit the sperm and then put it in a, you know, glass of some sort and retained it to have. But they got him. They had him. He was so embarrassed, right? I'll never forget how Clinton, when he was put before the hearings, went ghost white, then turned vivid red and had to, you know, because he was subpoenaed to tell the truth. And it was like a great big shudder went right through his spine. I'll never forget that. That should be played over and over. The moments of life of the presidents, right? That one and George Bush when he's been told that 9/11 happened in his face. The great moments of time with the presidents. Now, I just went through why he was killed because of the Federal Reserve. And then I'll go into another very important site of Ben-Gurion and who Ben-Gurion was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just give me a second. It'll take me time to get in there again. Holy moly. Yeah, I think I'm on the major thread now of this, what you were asking for, who is Permindex? I don't know if anyone could possibly find, you know, but it's been morphed and remorphed. But the players are the same. They're not dead. You know, who made the big money at that point in time. Okay, so Ben-Gurion, I'll read you this. And it's all about the letters I was telling you about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ben-Gurion, and it's right here. Letter to Ben-Gurion. I found what I was looking for. It's in... President John F. Kennedy tried to stop Israel from starting the nuclear arms race in the Middle East in a June 1963 letter to Prime Minister Ben-Gurion. Here, and I'll read it, because the letter is actually written. It's on Jeff Rentz's site, and wait a minute, I think it was Jeff Rentz's site that it read, but anyway, what it was... For, like 47 years ago, this is when this article actually came out on the internet there, and it said, President John F. Kennedy sought to halt in its infancy a nuclear arms race in the Middle East in June 1963. He wrote the last in a series of insistent letters to Israel Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion. Each of those letters sought what Israel now demands of Iran, international inspections of its nuclear facilities. The key difference is JFK knew for certain that Israeli officials, while insisting the Zionist enclave was a loyal friend and ally, lied to him about their nuclear weapons program at the Dimona reactor facility in the Negev Desert. We know that the Israelis were then secretly shipping highly enriched uranium to Dimona from at least one U.S. nuclear facility in Pennsylvania. Best estimates to date to sometimes between 1962 and 1964, when Israel produced its first weapon, their nuclear arsenal is now estimated at, now this was, it's dated a bit, this website, 200 to 600 warheads, possibly hundreds of dirty devices, and another related, like nuclear-related weaponry.
That's
Kennedy's letter. Sorry?
That's the figure I usually use.
Yeah. Kennedy's letter to Ben-Gurion was not cordial. The words were not drawn from diplomacy, but instructions that a judge provides to a jury to assess criminal culpability. And that the U.S. commander-in-chief demanded proof beyond a reasonable doubt that Zionists were not developing the nuclear weapons. His insistence left no room for this purported ally to maneuver except to deploy, I guess it's entropy, right?
Yeah.
Entropy as a means to avoid accountability. The day after, June 15th, letter was cabled to Tel Aviv for delivery to U.S. Ambassador Ben-Gurion abruptly resigned, citing undisclosed personal reasons. "I'm going to die. I'm having a heart attack. I can't take it anymore. Kennedy's letters or whatever," right? Because his resignation was announced before the cable letter could be physically delivered. Israeli authors claim that Kennedy's message failed to reach Ben-Gurion. "I don't know what you're talking about," their favorite words. "I never received a letter. It was waylaid. It came from the U.S. president, but I didn't see it." Can you imagine them saying that?
That
interpretive gross ignores what we know about the Israeli operations inside the serial U.S. presidencies and about the Tel Aviv's routine intercept of White House communication, particularly those most critical to our national security. That duplicity has only rarely been made public. Typical was the behavior of Israel spy Jonathan Pollard. I wonder who his great pals with. Nelson Thal, perhaps, right? Who provided Tel Aviv more than 1 million pages of classified material. And then there's a move to make Israel into a state of United States and let Pollard go free. Hello, is Americans waking up yet? Who runs this this country called America that they think they have a constitution? It's not there. There's trade agreements now in place, right? Anyway, this Israeli operation run from the inside, our government compromised the entirety of our national security apparatus in which the U.S. taxpayers have invested or had invested trillions of dollars. When Ben-Gurion deprived President Kennedy of Israeli government to which to negotiate, the resulting entropy denied the U.S. a critical strategic advantage. That entropy also set in motion nuclear dynamics that JFK and his advisors feared a half a century ago. When assessing the cost of the U.S.-Israeli relationship, cost in dollars, lives, and foregone opportunities should Americans put on this transgenerational deceit? This is big time, very big time information that should have dealt with. Now, the day that I learned that Kennedy is going down, he had just finished a speech at the United Nations reiterating this letter that he had sent to Ben-Gurion. And as soon as he said it out loud before United Nations, "Kennedy is going down," was the end result. He's got to be eliminated. So I'm going to go into the Jeff Francis, because the letter is there that he read. This is highly important. It all links in. These are the two key pieces of the puzzle, is the Federal Reserve and also the facilities, because it morphed into something we can't even control, and that's what he was scared of. So Kennedy was put back on square one, the snake and ladder game. The snakes won. When do we get wise get rid of the snakes? They have to be put in this bottomless pit. The old story or whatever there is that they're supposed to go in a big hole and not get out for 1,000 years. And then for one day, when they climb out of that hole, they try to take the world down again, but people are wise to it. They cemented, they put everything possible that they'll never climb out of that hole again. I'm being funny now, but it's, you know, I'm talking about the end times that they talk about. So who goes when? Anyway, so what it was here is JFK did not want the Jewish state to develop nuclear weapons, and he was demanding regular U.S. inspections of the Dimona nuclear facility, which, as we know, was and is used to develop Israel's enormous inventory of atomic and thermonuclear weapons. and the U.S. Air Force white paper regarding past and ongoing Israeli thermonuclear blackmail of the U.S. is a stunning look of how Zionism has exerted such staggering domination over U.S. for decades. So it's highly important that people get with it, because that book, Final Judgment, that Collins, Michael Piper, or whatever.
Michael Collins Piper, yeah.
You're right, that he wrote dead on the button there, because these guys are the ones that call the shots here all the time. So they were scared that he made his move to here, so you understand where I'm coming from again. Mossad movements against JFK are probably true, but don't forget who more probably did the actual shooting and cover-up. CIA, military, industrial fingerprints are all over the hit. Meyer Lansky may have had Permindex Mossad ties. I heard the word Meyer Lansky out of Clyde's mouth. I heard Permindex out of Clyde Forshaw's mouth. But he didn't know how to get up other than, that ladder to find. And I kept saying, well, what are you talking about? Don't you know who runs the world here? Anyway, Lansky had much, Meyer Lansky may have had Permindex Mossad ties. Example, he sought refuge in Israel towards the end of his life, because he got a state funeral there. I'm sure people have heard about it. A state funeral. But Lansky had much more going in the United States, here in the United States. For example, the United Fruit Company figures in the lives of more assassination suspects than did Permindex, Colonel Fletcher Prouty naming General Ed Lansdale as the man in Dealey Plaza photos walking past the famous hobo suspects. Also points to United Fruit. Lansdale's protege in the CIA was Alan Dulles, who worked for United Fruit for years. United Fruit was owned by the DuPont Company. Incidentally, the Bronfman family, which in this article ties to Permindex, held a major share of DuPont Corp stock up until a few years ago. In short, there may have been Mossad motives, but the large hand was they picked three fools, which which I said, you guys don't know your ass from a hole in the wall. You know what? They wanted my brother to go to live in a kibbutz.
In a kibbutz in Israel?
Yeah. What the fuck for? What the fuck for? I said, are you fucking crazy? You think and you're going to live in a kibbutz? I couldn't believe when he said that. So then I knew that, you know, at some point in time, my brother here was talking to the major players that were higher up than whatever. Anyway, Bronfman doesn't live far from Nelsenthal. They went to school together, and when you take a look at that foundation, that's where I got real, real put off, because it's all about the Zionist organization. The key top pyramid points to none other than the Rothschild banks, the whole family of these banks. They wanted Kennedy dead. They didn't want to lose their funny money, right, that was based on absolutely nothing from thin air. And the U.S. populace have got into debt for no reason at all, because they signed away. But like away, the signing was not really put in power. Fellow that I mentioned in that movie, Aaron Russo, mm-hmm. You don't have to pay taxes. Just challenge it in court. Mm-hmm. See if they've never, ever challenged the things that weren't put in an executive order. So that was so important. No president has repealed it. Ron Paul got gist of it. He got gist of it. So they have to make you into a blithering idiot, Ron Paul. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe when I saw in a newspaper that, you know, that the printing was not done in error. They smeared green on him. I'll send it to you. I couldn't believe it. making him look as if he was, you know, something like the most vilest green, as if it's puke. And then the words around him were that this guy was losing it. He wasn't losing it. He was right on the ball. Ron Paul understood that the Federal Reserve is the lifeblood for Americans. If we don't own our money and continue to have it printed by Federal Reserve, so the takedown has to happen at some point. But who's going to initiate it to take down these key players of the World Bank? It should have been done years ago. It shouldn't have come to this level at this point, because there's so much, like I said, with just the super frat, that there's no way to control any kind of attacks anywhere. They've got to do martial law worldwide. But so I didn't want to bring it to a head, because I knew, you know, whatever part that I go into this this whole game that Clyde played, he didn't know.
Haley, just repeat that. They have to go into martial law worldwide because?
Well, because, you know, if there's nuclear power, let's say Iran right now has it, and they think that they can stop anything coming from Iran over by the way of missiles or whatever, because they have their Iron Dome. Maybe someone can dislodge the Iron Dome that has the capability of doing it. Maybe there's a game plan between the Koreans, right, and the Chinese to send all of their nukes right into Israel and blow it off the map. People don't care about the carnage. It's for the dominance. So we're at a point now, no one knows who's got when, because they've never kept a tab of it. We don't know how many, the nuclear warheads are still in the Soviet Union. They probably don't tell their true amounts. Does the U.S. let inspectors into Russia, even today? Do they allow any inspectors into China? No. So, like, where's anyone coming at looking at a small fry of Iran? We're talking about people working in conjunction of world dominance, and I don't know where it's going to end, but I certainly see that this has got to come to a head of revealing, and it could be done diplomatically, saying, hey, do we want to waste the world, or let's talk here, because we're in a checkmate position right now.
Haley, I have to do my show. Can I call you back tonight?
Sure, okay. But anyway, isn't this legitimate?
Fascinating.
Here?
Yeah, you're doing great. I love it. I love it. Thank you.
All right.
I'll call you
all
tonight.
Right.
It'll be a while, but I'll call you.
All right, sure. All right. I'm going to make dinner.
Thanks, Haley.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye now.